We've talked in this course about how complex engineered systems are multi-layered, multifaceted, and multidisciplinary. Modern complex engineered systems also tend to be distributed and have what we call embedded intelligence. And this is part of perhaps a broader definition of complex engineered systems. And that means that it's a system that is more than just the sum of its parts. So if you have a number of nodes, as in a sensor network, or more generally, agents in a complex system that interact, then you're going to get much more complicated, more interesting behavior, and more capability. Now, within the domain of wireless sensor networks as complex engineered systems, each sensor node has an embedded microcontroller. The topic of this module is embedded computing, which is used to manage the sensor. And we can think of this as how do we engineer the intelligence into the sensor? Wireless sensor networks can be viewed as a type of networked embedded system. So in this module, we're going to cover wireless sensor networks as networked embedded systems. First, we're going to introduce some of the key ideas. Then we'll spend some time talking about hardware. Then we'll talk about software. And finally, we'll talk about a very important aspect of wireless sensor networks, which is energy efficiency. Embedded systems are different than what are known as interactive computing systems. Interactive computing systems are laptops, desktops, servers that basically interact with human beings. And therefore, human beings are willing to wait a little bit to get the results or their information. On the other hand, embedded systems are systems that interact with the physical world and at the physical world's time scale. And there are a number of applications, in fact, numerous applications of embedded systems. This would include appliances such as microwaves or ovens, mobile phones, in particular smartphones, and many medical devices. Many of these systems must be real time, and that means that the computation must meet a deadline. Now, the deadlines may be soft deadlines, in other words, they're met, say, 95% of the time, or there may be hard deadlines where they must be met. These systems that have hard deadlines are often used in life-critical systems. This is where you must have reliability and what's known as guaranteed responsiveness. And this is clearly true in, say, aircraft control, particularly in terms of passenger aircraft, and also with the advent of electronics, we're seeing more and more of this in vehicles such as cars and trucks. An excellent example of networked embedded systems are electronic stability control that are used in modern automobiles and trucks. It is also known by other names such as vehicle stability control, etc., etc. Now, these systems are very interesting because they are pretty much like sensor networks that are on board a vehicle. We use them to control the dynamics of a vehicle. So, for example, we have wheel speed sensors to monitor for skidding. There are also yaw sensors for yaw control, and What makes these systems very interesting also is that there's also actuation. So we are now seeing systems that actually take over for the driver safely. Perhaps a more exotic version of a networked embedded system would be a satellite. And not too long ago, a satellite called CloudSat was launched, part of NASA and JPL. It's a very interesting satellite, and as you might guess, satellites have many control systems, many sensors, many actuators, and they are distributed. There isn't one central computer normally. CloudSat's an interesting satellite because it uses a 94 gigahertz radar to basically study cloud structure in extreme detail. Here's the launch that occurred a few years ago. This is a artist's depiction of what the satellite looks like. And down on the bottom, here and here, are two example images. Now, CloudSat's interesting because it's a radar satellite, so it actually takes a very, very narrow pencil beam to understand what the structure of clouds are like. So we see here the track of CloudSat through a hurricane. In this case, it's Hurricane Bill of 2009. And this track is superimposed on this larger 2D image from a GOES satellite. Down here, you can see what the structure of the clouds look like. And you see here is where we've gone almost right through the eye of the satellite. We get very, very high detail of what the clouds look like by seeing what the backscatter is from the water droplets in the cloud. Over here on the right here is a picture of the southeastern US where there was a tremendous storm in February of 2009 that spawned many damaging tornadoes. And again, we see the track here. My pen is blue, but you can see the track here. And then here is the profile of what the clouds look like. And scientists can use this to understand better, for example, the structure of clouds that might spawn tornadoes. Embedded systems are pervasive in today's world. And in fact, of all the digital silicon out there, 99% is used in embedded systems. So that leaves only 1% for desktops, laptops, and servers. So it's a huge market, and the processor market alone is about $15 billion a year worldwide, and those go into products, everything from iPhones to rockets that have much, much greater value. And we can think of them in terms of a parts list. What goes into an embedded system? Well, we have sensors. We might have actuators, as in electronic stability control. We'll have analog and mixed signal electronics. We'll have digital hardware. And of course, for the programmable digital hardware, we'll have software. So, in terms of the parts list, there's a lot of things going on already. On top of that, many embedded systems are now networked, and that includes both wired and wireless communication forming that networking. Wireless sensor nodes are what we call deeply embedded systems. And we want to talk a little bit about what that means. First of all, most wireless sensor networks require many nodes, dozens, hundreds, thousands even. And this implies that to have low total system cost, the cost of each node has to be very small. And the fact that they have to be low cost implies a lot of things about the design. And one is that the clock frequency tends to be very low. On the order of maybe 10 megahertz, could be down to a megahertz, could be up to 50 megahertz. But compare that with your 2.5 gigahertz laptop. That's a huge difference. Same difference as in program memory. You might have 64 kilobytes of program memory. Could be as low as maybe 4 up to 256 or 512, but still much, much smaller than your typical laptop or even your typical smartphone now. In terms of data memory, usually less than 10 kilobytes. And all this is driven by the need for long battery life. And all of these things imply low power consumption, extending the battery life. And so here we are, we're down to low power consumption, and ultimately, we're very concerned about energy. Not only to make batteries last longer, but to make possible sustainable systems, systems that might be powered by solar, wind, vibration, or even temperature differences. Energy consumption is a critical factor, really for two reasons. Number one, it's to make things feasible, such as energy scavenging. But probably more fundamental is the idea that the total life cycle cost of a sensor network has to be economically feasible for people to adopt them. So a big driver is the use of digital silicon, and the question becomes, what kind of digital silicon? You could imagine designing a full custom chip for doing it. So it'd be a full hardware solution that would do it, and it would be optimized for the application. But full custom is very expensive, and it's just too expensive for small volume markets. You'll find that even for large volume markets, there is not a lot of full custom hardware. On the other side is FPGAs, and this is where you have field programmable hardware. In fact, you can think of these as essentially a sea of gates that you can configure for optimizing the computations that you need to make. Now, that is a problem because they have too much power consumption, although it's decreasing. But FPGAs do not yet have the strong support of peripherals. And these are the kinds of things that make a microprocessor a microcontroller. So, because neither of these two extremes, full custom hardware or fully programmable hardware, aren't quite filling the bill yet, the best solution is still software programmable hardware or microcontroller units.